Liberalos, obsesos. This is the third talk in continuation of the two already given to you. First day's talk was on values of life. And we came to the conclusion that soul is the most important phase about which we have not cared so far. We have been made with the body and its agents, or in the intellectual attainment. The Master said, is not body more than the raiment, and life more than the meat? But what does it profit to man if he gains the possessions of the whole world and loses one's own soul? For that reason, we came to the conclusion that we must do something to know about God. Unless we know about God, we must know about our own self. So self-knowledge precedes God knowledge. We are embodied souls, environed by mind and matter, identified with the body and outside so much so that we have forgotten ourselves. How to know ourselves? That in the matter of your self-analysis, when you lay down that God made man out with equal privileges, and the highest aim that is before us is to know God. For that purpose we have joined various schools of thought. Blessed is the school in which we have joined for this purpose. If we have achieved this object, our purpose of life is served. To know something, how can we give food to our soul? We came to the conclusion that it was the word, bread of life, which is word personified. Then yesterday we were talking about God, whether it is possible to see God, to find God, while in earthly life. That by reference to the various scriptures, we came to the conclusion that we can have it. What you say, manifestation, we can manifest God within us, and we can open our inner eye to see Him. And also we can open our inner ears to hear Him. So this was what was given to you yesterday. So there was also given some qualifications required for a man who wishes to know God. And that was told you that the chastity of life, perseverance, and also control of the organs of sense, the last of all, love of God and love of all humanity. Now we have to today we have to see how can we see God. You see God in worldness. When it came into being, worldness and nameless, when it came into being, it is called world. And now, that world has been the cause of all creation. That is why the Masters have referred the world as the cause of all creation. That word is also called by the name name, or word, or shabda. So one is the expression of God in nature, of the same God, which is the basic ground, I should say, the absolute God, which nobody can see in life, that is only going to Him, we are now totally. But when it comes into expression, we can have a glimpse of God. But with what eyes that were laid before you yesterday? Those are not the eyes of flesh alone, but the inner eye, called by different saints, by different names. Single eye or third eye, or the latent eye. So that is within each man, that is not the eye of the flesh and bones, but that the inner eye within each man, which is closed. If when that eye is opened, we do see the light of God and the fair device of God. How to open the inner eye? This is a question. To sit at the feet of somebody who knows the way. You know, Son of Man can do it, but it is the God power manifested in some man bone, which alone is competent to give you the inner eye, open the inner eye to see the light of God. Because God has no equal, no brother, no sister, no father. Now who can connect you to God? Common sense may you find, it is He alone who can raise our souls from the bondage of mind and matter and unite the soul with Himself. God resides in every heart. There is no heart where God is not. That's the controlling power of our souls in the body. It is that power where it is manifest, that manifested God in man can do that work. Each one of us has God in our heart, but the difference lies in the fact that God is manifest somewhere it is still latent. So that God into action power can be seen and can also be heard. So name and the named are in fact one and the same. Wordless God and God into action, which is called Word, they are in fact one and the same. There is hardly any distinction between the two. One is the abstract form of that which is complete. Light cannot be separated from the sun. Rays of the sun, the light of the sun is not separate from the sun. So the two go together all the world over. World, God in expression power, or the worldless state from which came into expression, is the same. Similarly, Godhood and God cannot be demarcated and set aside in watertight compartments as two separate entities. The former is just an attribute of the other. So now, a name or shabda is nothing else, nothing more or less than Godhood of God. So in Bible it is called the Holy Ghost or the Comforter. It is the primeval manifestation of God, responsible for the entire creation. It is the primeval, St. John speaks of it, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and one was God. All things were made by Him, you see. Then it goes further to say that without him was nothing, anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of man. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehendeth it not. This is what St. John said. But you will find further, thy world is settled in heaven. All spells are made by the word. So this is what about the word it is said. So all that is, you see, name and the named are but one, light of noun witnesses his glory. This is what the Mohammedan saint tells us. You find the same thing given out by the masters whenever they came, whether they came in the east or the west, that makes no difference. Further they say, all that is out and from love. For it pervades everywhere. It is the life principle of the entire creation. He in whom this world or noun becomes personified or manifested is called a saint. For it is said that the world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. This is exactly what Guru Nanak said. God, when he manifested in some mantle, it is he alone who can give us a contact with the coordination power. For you find world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. Such a one has reached the summum bonum of life. So such a person is competent at whose manifold God has manifested, that God manifested and on any human pole is only competent to raise our souls above the control of the mind and matter and connect it with his own self. That is for that reason, you see, this is the time, you see, man body is the golden opportunity which we can have that privilege. As I told the lame poet yesterday, the man who has got the man body has but sight to see God. So those, fortunate is the man who has contacted with a person at whose pole God is manifest. Because in his company only he gets a connection, a unity with God. The man who has not been able during his lifetime to establish a contact with world or noun, he at the time of death quits his body like a defeated gambler. So, greatness of noun and world and its need has been spoken of by all masters who came in the past, and we find description of all that in the scriptures which are with us today. So the access of spiritual regions cannot be gained except with the means of noun. The touch with the divine current purifies a person of all iniquities. All doubts and distractions become airy nothings, and the mind becomes steady and firm, with the result of God's light is reflected therein. So now may appear but in what it is. Mano, syllable, but it is great power behind it. But the dose of normal word when taken reduces the entire garbage to a heap of ashes, like there may be tons and tons of firewood. If little spark of fire put, if the whole thing turns out to mere a dust of comes into death similarly, he will come across some God man, you might say now, God in man or man in God. When you come across with him, he is able to give a contact with the Nam power, the world power within. By coming in contact with it, all the mental impurities are burnt away. Just like a spark of fire in a powder of magazine, you might say. So that Nam contact with the Nam power is what is required. Of course, you see, if you get then have contact with that body action power, our life is, truly speaking, becomes pure, you see. By communing with the Nam, one transcends the limitation of the flesh and reaches far beyond the realm of the fears of opposites. So a contact with Nam assures salvation to all. Whether good or bad, learned or unlearned, like sun and fire gives warmth and light to all. Similarly, you find it is just like you take a pill, which is very laxative, you see. You eat it purposely or even eat by error, you have motion, you see. Similarly, if your soul comes in contact with the Nam power within, then naturally the result is that our own sins are washed away, you see. So masters have defined this thing, that it is that power which is the power of all creation, and it resides in every heart. Now, there is no place where that God in action power is not. But still, to have contact with that, you cannot have it without the Master. Because it is the God in Him who can give you contact with God Him. So that is the controlling power which is controlling us in the body and controlling all creation. But where to find it? Guru Arjan says, for him, to find him, you will have to go within the laboratory of the man body. First you will have to withdraw your attention from all outside, tap inside and mess, as Emerson says, and then rise above senses. You will find him then and there. The yogi says, once Guru Ramadas came in contact with a yogi, he asked him where he can find a contact with the world of now. He told him, when you rise above the six dimensions in the body, you find him, you see. So what is it? I mean, how to recognize that God is there? So all masters say God is light. God is some creature. When wordless power came into being, it is called word. There is vibration. And vibration results from two things, light and sound. So there are two ways within, two aspects, you might say, of the body making power, which is controlling all creation and us in the body too. If you have contact with that, that will lead you to the place from where it emanated. So how to come in contact with that, for that we will have to just first withdraw from outside within, and from within rise above sensation. Then you come in contact with that light and sound principle. So for that reason the masters have been giving that God or world is a lamp unto my feet and light unto my body. So these are the expressions what we have from time to time when the masters come, you see. So now to that God in action power There are innumerable names given to that. The sages and the saints have described God in election power by innumerable terms. Some call it as the law of all. Some call it as the peerless one. Some say he is the nameless one. Others say, well, look, you are, he is incomprehensible and ineffable. So many names have been given to the God in action power, but all these are just attributive or quantitative names. Names signifying noun, names simply describe any one aspect or facet of God and appealed far most to individuals like him. So thousands of such names appear in the Holy Scriptures. Now some say it is pervading all. Others say it is encompassing all. Some say it is Allah, God, you see. Jews call it as Jehovah. So for that reason, these various names are used. So we have to start somewhere, from the names given to the God in action power, you see, to bring you in contact with the absolute God, the way back to God. So over repetition of names has its own value and utility. It is needed for some purpose, but it cannot lead to self-realization and God-realization. This is the way back, of course. It has its own function, but unless and no further. So we have the sweet remembrance of God, and for having that sweet remembrance of God, we must have some words to denote Him. But unless we come to the words, to the actual thing, which these very words denote, we cannot derive the full benefit of that. Both of which can be achieved only through contact with God in action power. Call it by whatever you may, but it is generally called by various saints or masters. Some call it word, the others call it Shabda, the third call it Ram Nama, Mohammedan saints call it Kalma. And these various names, in the Vedas it is called Shukti. And Lorasa term is a Shrosha. Mahamud is called it as a Kalamakari. So these are the various words given to the God in action power, context, and this context can come about only through the grace of some competent master. Who is a competent master? He is a man like us, apparently, but the God which is latent in his heart, it is manifest there. And he is conscious of that power is working through him. It is only the God power in him can unite us with God. So everyone repeating the monosyllable of any name gets no touch with the power around behind the monosyllable. If you say, for instance, water. Water is a liquid something. It is called in various languages by various names. That water is called aqua in Latin. In French it is called probably eau. In Hindi it is called jal and nir. In Persian it is called aap. So these are the words denoting that liquid by drinking which your thirst is satisfied. So first is just directing us to something by drinking which our thirst can be satisfied. The two are the different things, you see. It is the grace of the Master alone that can give us a living touch with the all-embracing life. Impulse and the rich yielding of Alexander. That is in his power, the God in him has the power to raise our soul, which is now embedded under the weight of mind, outgoing faculties and other endowments, to raise you up, give a lift, bring it up, and give a contact with that coordination power which is called as the living water of life. You remember, Christ met a mortal lady, Samaritan lady. She was carrying a pitcher full of water and asked her of water. She was Samaritan lady. She was wondering, asked, when you are a Jew, you have no connection with Samaritans. Why are you asking for water from me? And Christ said, had she known who it was who was asking for water, she would have given it. And he told her, son, when you get this water that you are carrying, this once you drink, your thirst is only satisfied once. Again you thirst again. But if you come to me, I would have given you a living water of life, by drinking which you would not thirst again. So it is the bread of life or the water of life. So bread of life is also the very word, you see. So the repetition of word water never quenches the thirst, mind that. One may slake the thirst by taking a draught of water. Similarly, by taking words, mere repetition of this or that name, without an actual touch with the named, give us no, I mean, full benefit that will direct us towards that thing, of course, but cannot take us to that world. If one were to become rich by calling for riches, then there would hardly be one without being rich. To talk of riches is something else. To talk of to be rich is something else. To talk about the health, I mean, Lord of health is something else. And to talk to be healthy is something else. So similarly, you find it is the water of life or what you call the bread of life, which the Master has been referred to. Christ said, I am the bread of life. Whoever eats in that bread of life has come from heaven. Whoever eats of it has got everlasting life. So what was that bread of life or the water of life? You will find world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. You see? So it was world personified. We have become in contact with that, the God, our soul goes through. That is the bread of life by which our soul becomes strong. So this question arises, you see, Guru Ramadas, Guru. First Guru of the Guru Nanak says, what is that name by repeating which you can know God? You can cross over the ocean of life. You should now ask any religion, you see. All those following those particular religions, they will say our own world is the only world that can take you across the ocean of life. Hindu then God, they say Ram is the only world. Sikhs say it is Vaimukhan is the only world. And Mohammedans say it is the Allahu only world. Well, who is that? Where is it? These are the names, qualitative names, and that karma as a true name and the word which is God in action power, until we come in contact with that basic or the ultimate thing which has been given by, expressed by so many names, we cannot cross over the ocean of life.
Good morning and welcome to the satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you listened to was the first 30 minutes of a lecture given at the Second Church of Boston on October 9, 1963, in Boston, Massachusetts. Our reader this morning is Sheila Gilmore, Hello, Sheila.
Good morning, and good morning, everyone. I'm reading today from The Night is a Jungle, The Thief of Your Life's Breath, and I'm starting on page 202. If your daily life is not under control, try to bring it in control, or give more time to meditation, and you will be able to gain control quicker. He who becomes the conscious co-worker of the divine plan will find his righteous life is made. Whatever he does will be performed righteously. He will not be able to act otherwise. The reason behind your failure is that you have not truly loved your master, but have merely made a show in various ways, financially, physically, or by lip service. There is no one who sacrificed his mind to the guru. Without giving up the mind, there is no success. The mind was sold to the Satguru. This server's work was correct. Give the mind into his keeping. This physical form is the master's. This wealth is the master's. This mind has been given to. Those who can do this will receive the greatest gift. The receiver may be a Hindu, Muslim, Christian, etc. For all outer religions are merely labels. We are all simply human beings. A human being is a soul with a body, and the caste is the same as God's. We are all the Lord's children, but unfortunately are going along in forgetfulness. And when we come to the Master, what does he teach us? This possessiveness has gone since I got the Master's company. There is no enemy, no stranger. All now are very dear to me. The change comes from within. We are human beings, but before that, we are soul, the indweller of the physical body. Why is there so much dissension? When the people have right understanding, then peace will reign on earth. This is the only panacea for all ills. It always was and always will be. Whenever man forgets the truth, the unity already existent in all, then sorrow and misery descend. The most effective cure for all distressing conditions is to join the soul back to the Lord and realize in truth the unity that exists. Nam is the panacea for all ills. Nam is no mere outer expression or show. It is a term given to the all-knowing and ever-existent Lord. Nam is the sustainer of Khand and Brahmand. It is the God in action power which is controlling the whole of creation. And to be connected to that power means to meditate on the Nam. Those who have meditated on the Nam, their toils shall end, and their faces shall flame with glory. Not only shall they have salvation, O Nanak, but many more shall find freedom with them. The most urgent work before us is being spoiled by slothfulness. All because the love for the Guru is not developed. Christ told his followers, "If you love me, keep my commandments." We are also told, "He who obeys the Guru's wishes knows what God is." But do we obey? If we would obey implicitly for 6 months, we would see the magical change in our condition. You can get salvation in this very life. If the giver is there, where is the pain in receiving? But unfortunately, the one who was supposed to receive the priceless gift is deep in slothfulness, sleeping or drifting away in the clutches of the senses. Those who receive something decide to put it away and ignore it. How can you expect the worldly conditions to change if you are not changing. I will give you an example from the life of Guru Nanak. A disciple named Bhai Ajita once questioned the Guru, "Maharaj, you say that some have had but a fragrance of Sikhi, which is true devotion to the Guru, and some live under the protective roof of a true disciple, but there are some who taste the nectar from a true disciple. Please give me the darshan of these three types of followers." Now listen carefully to this story. Guru Nanak took Ajita to a certain house at night. Houses in those days were made with inner courtyards. The owner said to his family, "There are some holy men outside. We must feed them." But they were very poor people with very meager fare, and they collected a piece of bread from each one's share and, with devotion, offered it to Guru Nanak and returned to their places. Guru Nanak and Ajita passed the night in singing praises of God, and in the morning the Guru sent Ajita to tell the owner, "We are leaving now." The owner replied, "Brothers, you are going? Then go. Who asked you to come?" As they walked on their way, Guru Nanak told Ajita, "This man has had a little fragrance of discipleship. This type of person will listen. They will serve both financially and physically, etc., but they will remain where they are." You see, when someone gets a slight fragrance, they're ready and willing to do anything, and yet when they leave that fragrance, all their aspirations are forgotten. Ajita then said, "Maharaj, I see this type of man every day. Now, please show me one who lives under the master's protection." They went to a village and entered the house of a large family who entertained and fed them with great love and devotion. When night came, they said, "Maharaj, have mercy on us. How can we control our mind? We are pitifully imprisoned in this world. Show us the way to salvation." So the whole night was spent listening to the advice of Guru Nanak until the sun rose at daybreak. When the Guru showed his intentions to depart, the family quickly cooked more food and packed it for their journey. As the Guru left, they pleaded for his grace and begged him to come and look after them, return soon to their home. So Guru Nanak explained to Ajita that this was the type of people who live under a true master's protection. How many people can you find who will spend the whole night talking about the Lord? Have you met anyone like that? Such people have hope of salvation. They may not go anywhere just now, but there's hope later. Ajita then said, "But what about those who have gained the essence of truth from a master?" And Guru Nanak promised to show him such an example. Some days later, they went to another house where lived a man, his wife, two sons, and a daughter who were imbued with the love of the Guru. They all received and entertained Guru Nanak with respect and devotion. To show true devotion to a master is like showing it to God himself. The wife immediately retired to the kitchen to prepare food. Her son came running to help her, but slipped on the floor, fell down, and died. Of course, she was distressed, but thinking of the karmic laws, attributed it to give and take, and then thought of the saint that had just come to her home. Resolving that the incident should not mar the occasion, she hid her son's body in a room under the covers of a bed, meaning to tell her husband only after the departure of the saint. Meanwhile, the husband had gone into the courtyard for something, accompanied by his younger son, who suddenly slipped, fell down, and died. The father then had exactly the same thought as his wife and hid his son's body in another room, after which he continued devotedly to help prepare the meal. When the food was placed in front of him, Guru Nanak picked up the small daughter and, placing her on his lap, asked her, "Where are your brothers?" She replied, They are in the lap of the Guru. In life or death, we are all in his lap. Guru Nanak then picked up a morsel of food and put it in his mouth, but could not swallow it. He said, "It will not go down my throat. They have bound me by their love and complete surrender to the Guru." And turning to the father said, "I want to meet your sons, so kindly call them." The husband and wife both became alarmed, for both were concealing the facts and did not know what to do. But the Guru insisted. So the husband called the names of his two sons. At once, both boys came from the respective rooms where they had been lying. They told of their interesting sleep, during which both were held in the lap of the Guru. Who can imagine the joy in the hearts of parents? Guru Nanak turned to Ajita and remarked, "Now this is the type of person who enjoys the very essence from the Guru's presence." This last example was one of true living, the kind of life that we must learn to live. You can see for yourselves where you stand at the present, and the only reason for that position is the fact that you do not know how to truly love the Master. Why would he who rises above the mind and senses try to keep you imprisoned here in them? It is the fervent wish of whoever has tasted the real nectar that everyone should enjoy the bliss. Meet the Master, my brothers, and take the true Nam into thy keeping. Tie this life's treasure to thee here and hereafter. The treasure of the Masters has value in both worlds. So, where does the negative power stand in this? The negative power comes in when we do not truly love, we do not obey, or we obey only as far as our mind agrees. This is what is called the power of negativeness. We even go so far as to give advice to the Master at times. Hafiz of Shiraz made the startling statement that if your guru tells you to drench your prayer mat in wine, then do so. Why? Would the one who has the intoxication of Nam wish to trap you in the worldly intoxicants? We should try to carefully understand the Master's teachings and what lies behind them, not waste time in intellectual wrangling and reasoning. When an officer gives the orders to fire, the soldier must fire, and the responsibility of the decision rests upon the officer. So our duty is to obey and die if necessary, as long as the condition of our mind does not develop to this kind of obedience. We will not get the full benefit that the Nam has to offer us. The Guru is not ignorant of the pathways to spirituality. You've got the connection, then daily increase it. And if you learn to obey without question, the color of this world will fade, and you will be dyed deep in the color of Nam. Disobedience results in being consumed perpetually in the fire of senses, not only in this life, but hereafter also. When someone remarked to Lord Vishnu that he must be very busy, always preparing the hells, etc., for so many erring souls, he replied, "No, I do nothing. The souls bring their own fires and are consumed in them." We go through life strictly according to the inner condition of mind. The Masters show a straight road out, but the worldly people object to it, being convinced that he is doing nothing but obstructing the fulfillment of their desires. The Master comes to give the true understanding of life, but the people chase him away, protesting that he has come to rot their roots by flooding them with water. They do not or will not understand the deep meaning of satsang, although in all religions it is stated that there is no salvation without Nam or word. It is already within you. You have but to be made aware of it. That person who is already all awareness can awaken you. He who has no light radiating within cannot show it to others. It is a work impossible to be accomplished by intellectuals or those learned in sacred scriptures, etc. Get the full benefit of meditation and increase it day by day. The more you increase it, the nearer will you advance toward your goal. If you refuse, the day will come when you will be filled with regret for the lost opportunity. It is all a very simple matter of fact. An outer show of respect will achieve nothing. Learn to obey implicitly. This is the secret in a nutshell. That's the end of the chapter on the thief of your life's breath. And I'm going on to chapter 9, chastity and forgiveness. The supreme ideal of human life is the realization of God. Religions were made to perpetuate the teachings of great souls who had attained enlightenment. They have left an account of their personal experiences for the guidance of posterity. They have all said that God is omnipresent. Whatever we see around us is undoubtedly His manifestation, but the question is how to see Him. We find in the Japji, the Lord's word is all-pervading. There is no place where His word does not exist. The Gurbani tells us, we have seen the glimpse of God. One can experience God only by rising to His level of super-consciousness. Although the atmosphere is full of microbes, nothing is visible to the naked eye. Does that mean that there is nothing in the air? We can see thousands of tiny objects through a microscope. Now, there are two possibilities. Either whatever is present in the air is made to magnify so as to correspond to the visual level of our eyes, or our vision should become so subtle as to see these tiny germs clearly. So it is impossible for us to see the highly subtle and indescribable Lord with our physical eyes. When we are able to develop super consciousness and subtlety at His level, we can have some experience of Him. The question is one of developing the third eye. Who can open the inner eye? Only the Master's grace can do it. In the Gurbani we find, through the grace of a God-man, you will see the temple of the Lord within. The human body is the temple of God. In order to attain super consciousness, one has to withdraw from all the physical attachments. So long as we remain identified with external objects, we cannot assume a subtle form. Tulsi says, the Lord dwells within us, but we remain ignorant. Cursed is such a life. Even after getting human life, if He is not manifest within, it is a great curse because we cannot accomplish this task only in human life. Oh, Tulsi, the whole world is suffering from cataract. Doctors do not give vision to cataract patients. They only remove the thin membrane covering the pupil of the eye. Similarly, the Lord is within us. He is our controlling power. The entire universe is His manifestation. He can be realized within, but not before our subtle eye is able to pierce through the darkness within. Tulsi Sahib and Shamasi Tabrez both have said the same thing. See the Lord with your own eyes and hear His eternal music with your own ears. If we see through the darkness inside, we can experience the divine light. Tulsi Sahib says that you will not be able to penetrate through the darkness without the help of a perfect master. In this lies the greatness of a master soul who can dispel our darkness and give us the inner experience of divine light. This is possible when our attention is withdrawn from outside and we rise above body consciousness. This is not easy. Despite years of meditation, past sages and seers could not always get this type of experience of divine light. They used to practice kumbhak, hathic yoga exercise, and after passing through the 6 ganglionic centers, got a little experience in the center of the 2 eyebrows. This practice takes hundreds of years. Swamiji has clearly stated, only the all-powerful master can pull the soul up. He alone can free us from the prison of oblivion. Who can rise above body consciousness? One who is unattached and is not engrossed in sensual pleasures can do it. Only such a person can easily tap inside. An ethical and chaste life is therefore very essential. Even if the master, by his own grace, lifts someone whose life is not pure above body consciousness, the latter will not be able to withstand it. It is crystal clear that there are 2 main obstacles in the way: passionate desires and anger. To lead a chaste life is not enough. We have to overcome all desires. In anger, the soul flows out. Self-indulgence and anger lead to various other vices. Unless these 2 enemies are disciplined first, others, greed, attachment, and egotism, cannot be controlled. One who succeeds in conquering all these 5 enemies is free from suffering. The senses derive their power from the mind, and the mind from the soul. If our attention is concentrated at the seat of the soul, the senses become powerless. Saints show us the way back to God through Surat Shabd Yoga. Where is the seat of the soul in the body? At the time of death, the soul withdraws behind the 2 eyebrows after leaving the lower regions. Anyone who is able to withdraw his sensory currents at this point in his lifetime can open his inner eye. But this can only be done through the grace of a perfect living master. First, the master helps us in withdrawing our attention from external worldly objects with which it is identified. In this body, the temple of God, dwell both we and our controlling power. The master has great power to pull the soul above the plane of senses to the seat of the soul. He opens the inner eye. Thus, the spiritual aspirant has a first-hand experience and does not require any other evidence. Until I see the truth with my own eyes, I cannot be fully convinced of what the master says, the Gurbani tells us very clearly. Unless the senses are controlled, the mind is stilled, and the intellect too is equipoised, the soul cannot realize itself. Gyan Yoga will not be of much help. We only draw inferences to acquire knowledge. But the true knowledge has to be experienced. Only an adept who has had a first-hand experience can give you even a taste of it. Similarly, only one in whom the divine light is manifest can show you light. Intellectuals and religious preachers cannot do this work. True inner experience can be given only by the grace of a truly competent master. By infusing his own life impulse, he puts us on the spiritual path and then unites us with the power of God. One who has subdued the senses qualifies for the divine grace. Cravings and anger can be controlled by cultivating chastity and forgiveness. Cravings and anger can be controlled by cultivating chastity and forgiveness. If you go into details, you will find that these are our main hurdles. If you were to listen to someone silently, you will find that he talks of his passionate desires, petty jealousies, factions, enmities, recriminations, etc. He will overrate some and underrate others. These vices must be dispensed with. Prophet Muhammad has said, if you can control two sense organs, namely the one between the two lips and the other between the two thighs, I shall stand surety for you in the Lord's court. We simply read and hear these words, but never go deeper into their meaning. If these two virtues were cultivated, it would be a great blessing. In the absence of these virtues, meditation is hampered. This is the main object of my laying stress on keeping a diary. The first column in the diary is for ahimsa, or nonviolence, and forgiveness. Even if someone harms you, forgive him. Do not injure anybody's feelings. One who practices ahimsa will not tell a lie, cheat others, or have ill-gotten gains. Now let us see what saints have said on the subject. Chastity and forgiveness are the two basic and most noble virtues of all. If we acquire these virtues, we will be successful in our meditation. Christ says, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of God." Children are endowed with these two qualities. They are totally indifferent to sex. They never mind if they are naked. If they go astray, we parents are to blame. If they fight each other, they soon reconcile their differences. Let us become like little children, and we will be successful in our meditation. A competent master, by virtue of the God power working in him, turns away your attention from outer pursuits, pulls it above the plane of senses, and opens the inner eye. He gives to the spiritual aspirant some capital of inner experience, which is his grace, but it is our responsibility to preserve it. Ibrahim Adham, king of Bukhara, once went to Sant Kabir. He served Kabir day and night. Mother Lowy, one of Kabir's disciples, one day praised Ibrahim for his selfless service to the master and felt that Ibrahim had become a deserving devotee for the spiritual gift. Kabir remarked that Ibrahim had not yet attained maturity. To prove this, Kabir asked her to throw rubbish on Ibrahim's head from the top of the house and then listen to what he had to say. She did so. At this, Ibrahim said that he would have dealt with the mischief monger properly had he been in Bukhara. When Kabir came to know of Ibrahim's reaction, he said that the latter had not got over his pride of kingship and egotism, and so he was not mature enough for initiation. After some time, Kabir told Loy that Ibrahim had become ripe for this gift of spirituality. As she had not noticed any appreciable change in Ibrahim, she wanted to know the criterion for this verdict. This time, Kabir asked her to throw the night soil on Ibrahim. She did so. To her surprise, Ibrahim said, "Oh God, I am even worse than this." Remember, one whose heart is full of compassion for others, who wishes well after having been hurt, and prays even for his enemies, is known as a Mahatma, a great soul. And I will stop there. I was reading from The Night is a Jungle. I started in the chapter on Thief of Your Life's Breath, and I continued into the chapter on chastity and forgiveness. Thank you, Master, for allowing us all to hear these words fresh. Thank you, Master.
Thank you, Sheila, for reading Master's beautiful guiding words to us. There were 81 participants at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Divine Master, for bringing us together to receive your blessings of love.
Everybody lives great days on being chaste. Still, with all that, we are not chaste. reason, atmosphere is poison. The people whom we touch, they are poison. So it is better if you get the company of a good, self-centered man. If not, then better leave alone. Only make the best use of the things. That's all.